We're on the edge and almost there, but we're restructuring one-sixth of the economy.
There's no doubt that the 20% to go is not going to be necessarily easy, and it never has been.
A lot depends on when the Energy and Commerce Committee finishes its work. We're on schedule either to do it now or to do it whenever.
Now or whenever, but it may actually be now in the Senate. That was the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, preceded by the White House spokesman, Robert Gibbs. And the biggest news, really, the first clip, Chuck Grassley, ranking Republican on the Senate Finance Committee. It is that Senate Finance Committee, chaired by the centrist Democrat, Max Baucus, that may in fact be on the verge of a health care bill breakthrough this morning. They held negotiations deep into the night, and Grassley came out afterwards and said what you just heard there. We're on the edge, and we're almost there. And we are very happy this morning to be able to talk about the health care bill with the former Senate Majority Leader, Tom Daschle. He was supposed to be leading this charge for President Obama, you may recall, but had to drop out because of an issue with unpaid taxes on a car and driver that surfaced back in January. But Daschle, a healthcare policy expert, has stayed active and last month was co-author of a bipartisan blueprint for reform with former Republican senators Bob Dole and Howard Baker. He also published a book this year called Critical, What We Can Do About the Healthcare Crisis. Senator Daschle, thanks a lot for coming on with us. Very nice to have you back on WNYC.
My pleasure. Good to be back.
Are you in touch with some of your former colleagues today? Is a bipartisan breakthrough at hand in the Senate?
Well, it's certainly, if not at hand, a real possibility. I think that the six people who have done so much to bring us to this point deserve a lot of credit for their tenacity and their determination to see what common ground can be found. They've been at it now for 2 months, and I think the sense we get in Washington this morning is that it's much closer, perhaps, than it's ever been to final successful resolution at the committee level.
I'm hearing that this compromise might drop the public option health insurance plan in favor of nonprofit insurance co-ops to compete with the for-profit insurance companies. Is that your understanding?
That's my understanding, correct.
And are you familiar with that idea? I think a lot of our listeners have been hearing the public option plan discussed here and elsewhere, but haven't heard this term nonprofit insurance co-ops. What are they?
Well, actually, nonprofit insurance co-ops are what the Blues used to be, the Blue Cross Blue Shield plans, until they sort of evolved to what they are today. But that's how they started. Co-ops are simply organizations, as we have in the Midwest and West in particular, now especially around telephone and electric services, where members in a certain region join their forces, join numbers, and pool their resources and insure themselves. So it's sort of like a self-insurance program for voluntary participants in a given region.
In your opinion, is that as good as a public health plan option? Is it good enough to bring about the change that you and other Democrats want to effect?
Well, I've always said that one of the worst things we could do would be to make the perfect the enemy of the good. Obviously, it's not perfect. I much prefer a strong public option. I think there's a lot we could do with it, a lot of savings we could see from it. But if we don't have the votes, it doesn't make sense to hold out for something that's just not tenable for others who oppose it. So finding common ground in this legislative process is critical. That's really what this represents. I don't think anyone would say it's the perfect alternative or the perfect solution to what it is we're trying to do. But is it good enough? That's still in the eye of the beholder. I think it probably is.
But don't we already have a failed history with private nonprofit insurance? Didn't, as you say, the Blues began as nonprofit co-ops, but they ultimately went into the for-profit system. And maybe they didn't even act much differently from for-profit insurance companies when they were nonprofit Blue Cross Blue Shield. What do you think?
Well, two things are going to determine how successful and useful they are. One is the degree to which we put in place a structure that makes them something other than what we've seen in the past. We can do that. Many of us have argued the less competition and the less opportunity for a pure public option, the more likely it is you're going to need more regulation. So I think it's really going to be up to Congress to put in place the regulatory framework to make this work right. You can do that. The other thing is we're changing the landscape dramatically with the exchanges that we're talking about, that is the pooled resources, with payment reform, with a whole range of issues that change the paradigm from illness to wellness, with a lot more emphasis on best practices and comparative research and evidence-based medicine. All those pieces are going to create hopefully a new system where we really can't compare what we're talking about in the future to what we've experienced in the past.
Listeners, we can take your health care calls for former Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle this morning. It does sound like they may be on the verge of a breakthrough in the Senate. They could have a bill to pass by the end of this week, said Charles Grassley and others after that late night session in the Finance Committee last night. 212-433-WNYC. If you want to talk to Tom Daschle this morning about health care, 212-433-9692. Or post your comment or your question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. And what else do you think, Senator Daschle, is key to getting a bipartisan bill by the end of the week? Any other specific provisions that you see as crucial negotiating pieces right now?
Well, I think the other really big crucial piece is the financing. That's been the subject, as you know, of a tremendous amount of work and discussion and debate, and it's always been one of the tougher things. Yeah, it's important to keep it in perspective. We're going to spend $35 trillion on health over the course of the next 10 years in our country. That's both public and private, $35 trillion. We're trying to find a way to come up with $1 trillion to put this new infrastructure in place, to bring everybody into these new exchanges, this pool, to have the IT necessary to really create a tremendously a new efficiency that we've not had before, a lot of things. That $1 trillion has been hard to come up with, obviously, but it looks like we're going to come up with it in three ways. First, with revenue, and there are a lot of different ways to generate the revenue, and I'm not sure that they've landed yet on anything that is definite, but they're looking more and more at taxing sort of the gold-plated insurance plans. A second is cuts in federal programs, and a third, to the extent you can in the first 10 years, they're going to get some help from the modernization that that we're going to be experiencing. Those three pools, two of them very large, probably 90%, will be cuts in revenue, and that's been a very contentious issue, and it looks to me and sounds to me as if they've come up with a tentative compromise with regard to getting that done.
So on all those things that you just mentioned, I wonder if that's why the polls show public support shrinking rather than increasing for the plan right now, because there are still large groups of Americans who are insured but are afraid that they'll lose something that we have. Seniors are afraid of this government board of experts that would be empowered to cut Medicare costs. People with good coverage at work are afraid that their benefits will be taxed. That's an idea gaining steam, and you mentioned it. We talked about that a lot on the show yesterday. Even union plans, like for New York City police officers, appear they may be in that category. Small businesses are afraid. Wealthy people would get socked with new income taxes that the Blue Dog Democrats oppose. That's a lot of groups of citizens with reasons not to like this.
Well, that's exactly right. The problem is that if they don't like this, wait until they see what they've got with the status quo in 10 years. You know, the Council of Economic Advisors said we're going to go from $8,000 per capita in this country to $25,000 per capita in costs over the next 15 years. We simply can't withstand that. We're going to see, when I was born, health care was 4% of GDP. My kids were born, it was 8%. My grandkids, 16%. If I'm lucky enough, great-grandchildren, it's going to be 32% of the gross domestic product, according to the Council of Economic Advisors. We really can't withstand that. We're 37th in outcomes today, and we're going down, not up. So the status quo may be the least acceptable, the least tenable of all, and we have to compare it against that, not the ideal.
Kathy in Nutley has a reaction to this compromise that may be in the works for a health care bill by the end of the week. Kathy, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Well, I don't argue that perfection can be the enemy of good, but good is not good enough. We have waited a long time, and I am a liberal Democrat. I have been for many years. But if the Democrats can't pull off this plan with a public option, then what good are they? With 60 in the Senate and a huge majority in the House and a Democratic president, it is appalling to me that we can't do this. This legislation will be useless. It's barely supported on the right, and now you're going to lose the left, and all you're going to have is the centrists. And maybe that's enough. I don't know. But I am appalled, and I will change my affiliation if this happens. I'm really angry.
Senator?
Well, I can understand the frustration. I'm angry, too, in many respects. I've been at this now for 20 years, and I share the caller's hope that we can come up with a plan that we can be very excited about. I will say this. I don't think anyone should look at whatever happens this year as the last word on health care. We're going to continue to build. The question is, can we have a framework that we can build upon? Can we have a foundation upon which we can get to the more perfect levels of good health care as we go forward? So no one should look at this as the culmination and ultimately the final verdict on the way health care is going to look in the country for the next couple of decades. That's not the way this works. And with regard to 60 votes, unfortunately, illness has been a major factor in getting to the 60. We have two senators who aren't able to vote right now, and so we don't have 60, and that's the magical number. So if you don't have 60, what do you do? Do you try to negotiate with somebody to get 60, or do you just give up and say we're going to have to wait until we find 60, maybe 10 years from now, and try to work from there? I'll finish with this. My hope is that we can get to 60 with whatever means necessary, build the foundation, and keep working at it to get to the perfect as we go forward.
Former Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle, my guest on WNYC, talking about the health care compromise that appears to be in the works. The Senate could vote by the end of the week after late-night negotiations in the Finance Committee that, among other things, may be taking the public option health insurance plan out of the bill. Senator Daschle, as you may remember, was supposed to be leading this charge for President Obama, but had to withdraw from that job. And his book is called Critical, What We Can Do About the Healthcare Crisis. Is Senator Kennedy not healthy enough to come and cast a vote if it gets to that yay or nay moment?
Well, I can't comment on Senator Kennedy's health because I just don't know. I do know this, that Senator Kennedy and Senator Byrd, two incredibly valuable people in the caucus and leaders that everyone has immense respect for, haven't been able to be there for votes in the last several weeks, the last several months, actually. So it's not something that I think leadership can count on. Obviously, we pray for their good health and hope that they're back soon, perhaps as early as September. But right now, we don't have those two votes.
Norm in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Norm.
Hello, and thanks for taking my call. Sure. I have two questions which I think were posed to the president at his healthcare press conference, in which he, to my satisfaction, did not respond to. Number one, can you promise me, Senator Daschle, that my health care won't get worse? And number two, the plan that you guys are proposing, would you accept it for yourself and your family?
Well, the answer to the second question is yes, emphatically. I mean, the whole idea is to make sure that we create a little bit more equity and parity with health care and health security in this country. And members of Congress are going to have to accept whatever it is they create for everyone else for themselves. And I would hope that that would be the case. So emphatically, yes. In fact, I think it will be a dramatic improvement for a lot of reasons. I think that we can improve quality, we can improve access, and we can reduce cost if we do this right. And that's exactly what we're hoping to do, to create a high-performance, high-value system based on greater access, better quality, and lower cost. With regard to the first question, without question, we will build a better system. That's the whole idea, because we know the status quo is completely unsustainable. We cannot sustain the current system for another 10 years.
What about this system that we've been hearing about a lot the last few days, like at the Mayo Clinic and the Cleveland Clinic, where doctors are paid on salary rather than fee for service. And that's supposed to end the incentive just to order more tests and order more procedures because the doctors get paid each time one is ordered. That may be a good system for the Mayo Clinic and the Cleveland Clinic. Is it applicable to the country at large? Because we still tend to think of doctors as being relatively private practice practitioners. How many of the doctors could be brought under that kind of a system on a nationwide basis? Is that a solution on a massive scale?
Well, I don't think anyone can say absolutely certainly that it is the solution. I think you can say fairly safely that that is the trend. Doctors want to get out of the business of health and more into the practice of health. And by taking salaries and by dealing with circumstances now created in some of the most prestigious institutions in the country, they're doing exactly that. They're willing to trade off whatever advantages there may be in the business side of health in order to put more attention, more focus on the practice side of health. I hope we can do that. You know, the way we get healthcare today, if we were going to buy a car the way we buy healthcare, we would order the steering wheel and pay for it. We would order the wheels and pay for it. We'd order the engine and pay for it. We'd order the seats and the carpet and pay for it. And we'd have a 4 or 5 page line item list of everything that is in that car that we'd paid for and selected. That, to me, is the essence of healthcare delivery and the way we pay for that service today, and it's wrong. We just got to buy the car, not the service, not the parts.
Julie in Brooklyn Heights, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Well, if health co-ops were so viable, why did they opt to go private if that was workable? I don't know why we have to try to reinvent the wheel. Canada has a perfectly working system, but I think our nationalistic attitudes are we don't want to copy Canada. It would be, like, humiliating.
Julie, thank you. And there are really two questions there, Senator Daschle, and I hope you can answer both of them. One is, why did Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and other co-ops transform themselves into for-profits if that's a viable system? And secondly, why not just support a single-payer option that isn't this Rube Goldberg contraption with so many confusing and scary moving parts?
Well, I think it's I don't like to say it, but I find myself saying that in our health system today, in order to understand how it is we got here, all you have to do is to say follow the money. You follow the money and you find out where it is that decisions were made and why we made them, and that's exactly what happened. We incented for-profit systems, and that has been the trend in part because healthcare with $2.5 trillion could be a very profitable enterprise. The real question is, can we get away from incenting in some ways the wrong ways with which to provide health care and re-incent and create new ways, new paradigms? And I think the answer is yes, so long as we've got the political courage and the vision to do that. That, to me, is the answer, and that's really what we're trying to do here. So it's to create a new system that incents more nonprofits, more co-ops, more less emphasis on profit, more emphasis on value. There are a lot of Western systems that don't have a public plan that work very, very well. Why not a single payer? Very simple. We don't have the votes for a single payer. This is a democracy, not a dictatorship, and there are those who would like to dictate that we have a single payer. I think you can make a pretty good argument from an efficiency and a quality point of view, as other systems have, but we don't have the votes, so we have to take what's possible, not what some would like.
Why would many Americans join these not-for-profit co-op plans that would replace the public option alternative rather than stay with their private insurance if they have, I mean, their for-profit insurance if they have for-profit insurance?
Well, the Commonwealth, one of the most prestigious organizations in the country, recently did a report that said 48% of those who have health insurance don't get the care they need. In other words, they are grossly underinsured. So even if you have insurance, and in some cases a lot of people have nothing but catastrophic insurance, you are technically insured, but that doesn't mean you still have the access to whatever services may be required when you're not well. Well, that's really the essence of creating a public option or creating a co-op, is to set the standard and to ensure that minimum benefits, better value, and lower cost are all part of the equation.
And people are going to have to...
You can do that with a co-op. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say people would have to be convinced that they can get both of those things at the same time. And I think that's where a lot of Americans get stuck on the reform in general, that they can get a plan that both has better, more reliable, more thorough coverage, and that costs less.
Exactly. And I think that that's really the challenge in public policy, to create that. And obviously, I think it's generally agreed that the most effective way to help create that is to do two things: to create these exchanges where everybody participates. There's no, you aren't selected out because you're ill or because you can't afford it, and that you create a public option to create the competition within that exchange. Those two things can produce this better value, lower cost option or scenario that we all want.
We've just got a minute or so left, and I want to get back to the politics, because you've been through the political wars on this. You were there in 94 when the Clinton plan failed. You know the GOP politics. You know the strength of the lobbyists, the whole thing. Who are the biggest obstructionists to universal coverage right now who the media should have our eyes on?
Well, for whatever reason, I would say the vast majority of the Republicans have made the decision that they want to kill this plan. They want to stop it. They see political gain out of it. I think there may be short political gain, but in the long term, we all lose. But I would like to see if we could lessen the politics. We could find ways to create more bipartisan support. But ultimately, I think the leadership in the House and Senate, Republican leadership, who have seen this as a real political opportunity to embarrass President Obama, are the ones who ought to be held accountable.
Do you think the Republicans will go for it in any case? I know our first caller talked about the 60-vote veto-proof Senate, filibuster-proof Senate. Even short of that, even if it's 57, 58 votes, why not just get in there and make the Republicans filibuster if that's what they want to do and show themselves in that way? Because maybe we're headed for another repeat of the stimulus bill, where you're going to compromise and get no Republican votes anyway.
Well, we actually, that was the only way we got stimulus, as you may remember. We got 3 Republican votes that took us over 60. And that is exactly what Senator Reid is trying to think about, as we find ourselves a couple votes short of 60 right now, and that's assuming that you're going to get every single Democrat. So it's a very tough calculation. This is the scenario in not reaching 60 is exactly what happened in 93 and 94. 15 years later, everything's gotten worse. The costs have gotten greater, the quality's gone down, and the access is even worse today than it was then. We don't want to have to wait another 15 years.
And I know you're blaming the Republican Party for being the big obstructionist. What about any particular private interest? Like 1994, the Harry and Louise ads, which came from a corner of the insurance industry. Is there a particular lobby in there, in your opinion, that really needs to have a light shined on it right now because it's particularly powerful, overly powerful, in pushing against this reform?
Well, that's really probably the good news, Brian, is that we haven't seen that level of engagement on the part of any of the special interests, the stakeholders, as we saw 15 years ago. There isn't anyone leading the charge in an effective way that will have an impact like we saw back then. In fact, the pharmaceutical manufacturers, are actually running ads that are pro-health reform. The insurance industry, the doctors, the hospitals, they've all participated, unlike 15 years ago.
Right.
So the good news is that we're in a different place today than we were back then, and we just need to stay there.
Former Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle, his recent book on health reform called Critical, What We Can Do About the Healthcare Crisis. Thank you so much for doing this with us.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Close races in New Jersey and to some degree in New York now. Bill Thompson pulling within 10 points of Mayor Bloomberg in the latest poll. We'll talk about both of those races on the show today, and we will meet John Corzine's running mate in just a minute, State Senator Loretta Weinberg from TNEC. Stay tuned.